Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Sophia Wilson, who is actually looking very tanned and healthy after a prolonged stint in the south of France.
Yeah, I have had a very nice August, but it's nice to be back. Probably not quite as nice as actually being in the south of France, but yeah, a few weeks off the podcast.
That is working from home taken to the next level, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I did have a genuine holiday for a couple of weeks, and then I might have slightly extended it with a few working days from France.
Very nice. Well, you'll be back in France pretty soon to top up the tan, which is good.
Yeah, the with the night starting to get shorter here, it's reassuring to know that yacht show season is approaching, so it wasn't the end of my sunshine for the year.
Good. Yeah, September is going to be insane, isn't it, really? I mean, Cannes is literally around the corner. Then we've got a couple of events leading up to Monaco and then Saint-Tropez. I always say to people, if my marriage survives September, I'm good for another year, because it is basically at home for about three nights the entire month. But one gentleman that will be at Cannes, very excitingly, is racing Supremo, Fernando Alonso, who he'll be there with Sunreef, because he's just bought a 60-foot Sunreef catamaran, the Eco Power, which is covered in solar panels. So I spoke to him yesterday on Instagram. If you didn't catch that, that's available now. You can watch the whole interview. Big thanks to Sunreef for setting it up, first of all. And he was a really nice guy. Nice bloke, Fernando Alonso. Never spoken to Fernando before. But he was great. He wouldn't tell me what he was going to name the boat.
Oh,
he said he was still figuring that out. But my Formula One knowledge is very, very poor.
So yeah, Holly, who's our online editor, is green with envy at the whole thing, because she is obsessed with Formula One. And he also is going to be holding a press breakfast as part of the work he's doing with Sunreef at Cannes. And Holly is not in Cannes, but Katia will be in Cannes. And I think she's very envious that she's not there for that one.
But it's good that I didn't know Holly was an F1 nut. That's good to know, because there's a few in the office. So our world and the world of F1 often interacts. So I always have to get a briefing from someone who knows a lot more than me, so I don't say something completely stupid when we're talking about F1.
You managed to avoid that yesterday.
Yeah, just scraped through. But Sunreef, I mean, they just captured this amazing market of high-level sports superstars. Nadal, Rosberg, and now Alonso. So who's going to be the next?
It's a very clever PR marketing campaign.
I mean, it's just priceless PR, isn't it? I mean, because everyone talks about... And even though it's only 60 foot, you know, it's a lovely 60 foot boat, but it's not.
Is that how you open the conversation with him yesterday?
Why isn't it bigger, Fernando? But no, but it's obviously one of the benefits of a multi-hull form. Obviously, that all that volume is 60 feet, so you don't need a massive boat. But traditionally, I suppose at Boat International, we wouldn't talk to an owner of a 60 foot yacht. But it's Fernando Alonso, so of course we do. It's fantastic. So. Yeah, and once you buy one, it's his first boat as well. So he started at a good size and he'll probably go 60, 80, 100, 120.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Serena Williams is about to retire. Maybe she's got some more time for yachting.
She should get a boat, shouldn't she?
Yeah, next on the list.
Yeah, Sunreef, give her a call. We're talking about my favourite subject, catamarans. I was at the Science Museum. Sophia, you'll be very excited to know, last week with my kids, the Science Museum in London. It's an absolutely brilliant museum. And one of the exhibits that I saw, I wasn't aware of this. It was a very early model of a catamaran. And I think it's the first modern catamaran. Obviously, proas or, you know, outrig canoes have been used by the peoples of the Pacific and Indian Oceans for thousands of years. But this, I think, I'm right in saying, was the first modern interpretation of the catamaran. So it was designed, I discovered, by a guy called William Petty, who was a member of the Royal Society. He and various other fellows of the society were trying to come up with, in the 17th century, they were trying to come up with ideas for improving the nation's economy. And his idea was this twin-hulled ship. He designed it between 1662 and 1685. And the model on display in the Science Museum was built in Portsmouth by a guy called Stephen Wallage. And yeah, I'm very happy to be correct on this, but I'm pretty sure that is the first modern catamaran. obviously the concept wasn't taken up, which is a clearly historical tragedy. It's taken to the 22nd century, 21st century before people have really...
into it. Out of interest, how much time did you spend trying to explain this to your children?
I got very excited about the catamaran model and my kids weren't remotely interested. There's lots of buttons to push at the Science Museum. They were much more interested in running around pushing buttons. But trying to enthuse them about catamarans designed in the 17th century didn't go down too well.
No, there's a surprise.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought lesson. It?
Yeah. So that's not quite the end of catamaran chat. You'll be thrilled to discover. We'll discover more about a particular catamaran in the news section. But in other events news at Boat International, I'm delighted to say Darman Yachting are coming back as the title partner of our Explorer Yacht Summit, which is taking place in Monaco on the 10th of November. Obviously, Darman have become synonymous with adventure yachting over the last few years, mainly due to the success of the amazing Sea Explorer series, which is right up there, actually. It hasn't got two hulls, but it's up there as one of my favourite monohulls.
Suggest it to them at the conference.
Oh, well, yeah. What are you doing, guys? Come on, two hulls. But they're awesome boats. So Darman Yachting's marketing director, Thomas Waringa, said, "The Explorer Summit is a key industry event that drives the inspiration and ideation of one of the most exciting types of yachts, expedition yachts. As leaders in the luxury expedition yachting area, we want to fuel the interaction and reflect with fellow industry partners on what is cooking underneath the surface." Couldn't have said it better myself. So what can we expect at the Explorer Yacht Summit this year, Sophia?
Yeah, so it's shaping up really well. And you can see a full outline of the proposed programme online, but a couple of confirmed highlights for you. So Victor Vescovo is coming as our keynote speaker. We've spoken about him previously on the podcast, and Charlotte actually did an owner's interview with him as well, which you can go back and find. But basically, he's used his yacht Pressure Drop as a base from which to launch his submersible Limiting Factor to basically do these incredible underwater explorations. His most famous project was Five Deeps, which took him to the deepest parts of five of the world's oceans, but he hasn't slowed down since then. As we were chatting about, I think the last time I was on the podcast before I took my extended holiday, how far the yachts that traveled furthest. Again, by far and away, he's traveled further than anyone else in the first half this year. He's a really fascinating guy, and we've tried to get him at the conference on several occasions and failed, mainly because he's been deep underwater somewhere. But he has confirmed that he's going to be here this year, which is great. And then someone else, another confirmed speaker, is Captain Stephen Edwards, who is from the 60-meter Perini Navi Seahawk. And that yacht picked up a judge's special award and the Voyager category at this year's World Super Awards. It's a really cool program that Captain Edwards runs. So it's a new owner, and he has a really clear mission, which is to facilitate the advancement of basic science research, science education, and technological innovation by focusing on local initiatives with global impact. So basically, he wants the yacht to travel around the world, and wherever it goes, he wants it to have some kind of impact. So they've done all kinds of things, from rebuilding a dog shelter in Bonaire to doing a swim and sail program in the Galapagos. And then recently, they've been doing lots of work with monitoring shark migratory patterns in the Galapagos, Mexico, and French Polynesia. So he should be able to give a really first-hand insight into how you can make these kind of philanthropic programs that work. You know, for the owner, he's still having an amazing time traveling all around the world in the yacht, but hopefully also making some real impact as he goes. So I'm really forward to having Captain Stephen there to talk about that further.
It's so inspirational, isn't it? And I think we're just going to see more and more of that in the future. A lot of these expedition yachts have, as part of their brief, their building brief, a research element, don't they? And why not? You know, these super yachts are going to some of the most pristine environments on the planet. So if you can do a bit of good while you're there.
Yeah. Well, you're in charge of lining up some of the other speakers, but we'll give you a couple of weeks to announce those. Yeah, shall we, Stuart? How's that coming on?
Well, I'm desperately trying to get Carl Allen there. So Carl's the owner of the Westport GG and the Darman support boat Axis, because he's discovered this amazing treasure. He's been hunting for it for a while, but the Spanish galleon sank. I'm not going to try and pronounce it because I'm not even going to try. It's very hard to pronounce. He's pulling up gold almost daily. There's amazing artifacts from this hoard of sunken treasure. So I really want him to come and talk about treasure hunting and being an owner who treasure hunts and, you know, about the amazing finds. So what I better get him now because it would be massively disappointing if he doesn't come. But I'm talking to Carl a lot. He's obviously very busy pulling up medallions and all sorts of cool stuff from the bottom of the ocean. But fingers crossed, I can twist his arm and convince him to come to the Explore Yacht Summit in Monaco in November because he has got some great stories to tell.
I was actually in Monaco last week in between, obviously, having a holiday and doing some working from home. I did pop down to Monaco to see the recently delivered AXE, or AIX, depending on how you want to pronounce it. She's the sixth hull in the San Lorenzo Alloy series, and she's about to head for Australia, where she's going to be available for charter. And it's quite a cool story because it's a first-time owner. I think he, you know, chartered a handful of yachts maybe, and then he's gone straight in, you know, with a new build. And he is French-Australian based in Australia, and he's decided that he wants a yacht to go and see all of Australia by boat, which is, I just think, is a really fun idea. So I was invited down by Joe Howard, who's the MD of Ocean Alliance, and they're based in Sydney, and he's going to be managing the yacht. Joe and I actually did a fam trip in the Kimberley a few years ago that he put together, so I know him quite well, and I know he's super excited to have a yacht of this kind of calibre in that part of the world.
That trip looked amazing.
Yeah, still.
Yeah. I was very envious.
It's still probably the most amazing trip that I've ever done at boat.
The photos were incredible.
Yeah. We had a drone photographer with us, so the photos that came from it. But on that trip, we were on a yacht called Ander, which was lovely, but was a converted tug, and you know you could feel her history while on board, is a polite way of saying it. Whereas you're suddenly going to have this brand new European feel San Lorenzo, and there's no reason why she doesn't have the ability to go and cruise areas like the Kimberley. She's going to start off based between Sydney and Queensland, but then she will hopefully go and do some of the further afield places like that. I don't know whether, have you ever been on one of those alloys before with the split tier owner's cabin?
I haven't. I'm hoping to see one at one of the shows. One got a World Superyacht Award this year. And we've just, I'm pretty sure the October issue, there's one featured in the October issue as well. So they're very clever boats, aren't they?
Yeah.
The way Bernardo Zucon laid it out. And I think his words, I remember reading the report, his words were you wanted to be able to get lost almost on the boat. There's lots of really interesting areas and moments of design and things like that. So it's not conventional by any stretch of the imagination. And they've done very well, that series. I think that boat, I'm right in saying, was also designed by Liagra, Studio Liagra. So, and they do an amazing job. That's who I'd get to design my boat, I think, Liagra. They're so good. So that's a fascinating boat. So I'm hoping that one turns up at a show.
Yeah, well, it was great. It was the first time we were aboard. And as I say, that owner's cabin, and it's been designed so that it feels like a kind of completely separate apartment. And effectively, you walk in and then the stairs up to a different area, which on this yacht they've kept as kind of a seating slash second office. But I think on another one in the series, they've made it a small gym area. And then there's also stairs which then lead you down into the master cabin. So it just has an amazing feeling of space for a yacht that is, you know, under 500 GT. Mm. It's very impressive. She also has a great beach setup, which sadly obviously couldn't see because she was berthed in Monaco, but the captain was absolutely raving about it. And it feels like there's been quite a bit of buzz around the Australian superyacht industry, but I feel like this yacht's really going to kind of take the offering down there to a new level. And a lot of, obviously it was a broker open day as well, so a lot of brokers having a look around. And I think they're quite excited about being able to offer something which is maybe a bit more familiar to their usual clientele, but in that part of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be great. It's great for the Australian charter market. And you're right, it is very buzzy at the moment. I'm actually going to go down there later this year because the Super Yacht Gathering is happening in Auckland in November. So I'm going to go down to NZ and then hop across to Sydney and go up the coast a little bit and see some of our friends from Australia. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. I was there in March as well, so that'll be two trips to Oz this year, which is good. So I can go see some family as well.
Emma's racking up.
Yeah, but there's loads of super owners in Sydney as well. There's lots of activity in that market, so it's a good place to be.
Yeah, well, I think Joe is planning a fam trip, so have a fight over that one in the office.
Yeah, quite.
But you are technically Australian, Stuart, apart from when it comes to cricket, where you then claim to be English. I get very confused over your nationality generally, but where would be first on your list as a cruising destination?
Kimberley, absolutely. Mainly because of your feature, because it's so wild, isn't it? And yeah. There's no one there.
Yeah.
It just looked amazing. The landscapes are fantastic. And there's some great photos you can get up there. You kind of almost park your boat up against the waterfall, don't you?
Yeah.
And it just looks so spectacular.
It's quite a tricky area. Speaking again to the captain, because he knows the area really well, because it has a huge tidal range. I think it's up to 9 meters, the tidal range. So you do need to know what you're doing. And obviously lots of crocs and
sharks.
Got
to watch out for the crocs
as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not a top swimming destination, but it acts as a lovely spa pool on board. So you could just hang out in that rather than going for a swim with the crocs.
Well, what kind of Australia's got to be trying to kill you somehow. So. Crocs, jellyfish, sharks, spiders, snakes. But yeah, it's worth it because what a place. Alrighty, let's move on with the news. Sophia, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, so I know Cecile and Charlotte spoke about this last week, but the 72.5 metre Super Axioma has now gone under the hammer in Gibraltar with a total of 63 bids received. In a statement issued by the Office of Admiralty Martial Supreme Court last week, it said that the successful bidder will be selected by the Admiralty Martial and confirmed that the transaction would be finalised in the next 10 to 14 days.
I hope they got mine.
Yeah.
My bid. I'm not sure it'll be the successful one, but so.
And then once the sale's finalised, we'll obviously get details of the final sale value. It comes after the superyacht was arrested at the end of March as a result of sanctions against Russia. Again, I think we've gone over this in the past, but she marks the first Russian-owned superyacht to be listed for sale since the economic sanctions were introduced. It's understood that she was auctioned, though, following a loan violation, which has arisen now the yacht's former owner has been added to the EU list of sanctioned individuals. She was listed without a reserve price. Stu, we've had a bit of a sweet state in the digital team. Do you want to make a guess what the successful bid's going to be?
Oh, geez. 40 to 50. I don't know. What's the team saying?
I think it's ranging anywhere. I think I said 45 and I was one of the highest. I still think that would be good value given her charter pedigree. Mm. And I think the lowest is probably I think 32 is the lowest. So
okay.
It's,
you so never quite know with auctions. So historically, from the very few auctions that I'm aware of in the superyacht, generally the price is quite low.
Yeah.
But Axioma does have that amazing charter record, doesn't she? So that might...
And 63 bids. So, I mean, there definitely was interest there.
Well, yeah.
I mean, they might not all be from people like you.
Mine was the low ball offer. So when will we find out what the final...
So next 10 to 14 days.
Okay.
Basically, have to wait for the transaction to be finalised. I presume they have to check that it's all valid and paperwork and everything in place. And then in theory, we should know. We should release it. But can't guarantee that.
So what are the stakes? So who's...
I don't know. Probably another bottle of Lidl's Finest.
Little champagne.
Lidl's Finest champagne. Okay. I like to treat the team well.
Yeah, clearly. Next up, we have some news of another catamaran. Extra Yachts, a brand of ICER yachts, has unveiled the first model in a new line of motor catamarans. Named Villa X30, the 30-metre multi-hull yacht features an interior and exterior designed by Dutch studio Phantom and is characterised by high-volume interiors and a fluid layout that makes full use of her 13.7-metre beam. The model will be fitted with solar panels in a bid to harness renewable energy and provide additional power for onboard utilities, the yard said. The sustainable focus extends into the design, with the yard considering a variety of repurposed fibres, sustainably assessed paints and plasters, alternative leathers and reclaimed woods. That's a big issue at the moment, reclaimed woods and woods generally and decking materials, given the awkwardness of the teak supply and the political issues around that as well. Okay, we'll keep an eye on that one. There are a number of layout configurations on offer, but key design elements include an aft cockpit with a glass balustrade that maintains the views while providing shelter from the elements. The yacht will have a top speed of around 17.5 knots, so that's a good top speed, with a cruising speed of 12.5 knots. The gross tonnage is estimated at 320. Good looking boat, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Going to place an order?
Another Stuart Campbell low ball bid. We'll see.
Next up, we have that Heason has joined the hull and superstructure of Project Jade, the third hull in its 50-meter semi-displacement superyacht class. With the engines also installed, the Dutch yard has confirmed that the yacht is on track for its spring 2024 delivery date. In a statement, it said that Project Jade builds on Heason's legacy of fast, hard chine aluminium yachts and represents a good example of the yacht's ability to deliver fast sub-500 GT yachts that comply with new emission regulations. So she's got an optimized hull, which has minimized the transom depth and created a propeller tunnel, which has reduced the draft to just 2.15 meters. And this will also improve fuel efficiency and performance. According to the yard, these factors equate to an efficiency gain of 12% in comparison to previous 50 meter models. Accommodation on board is for a maximum of 12 guests and 5 cabins, comprising 2 twins and 2 doubles in the lower deck and a master suite on the main deck forward. And the project milestone comes after Heason launched its 55-meter Project Gemini as Reliance at its OSS facilities last month.
Congratulations to Heason. They are really, they're doing, just going so well at the moment, Heason. Yeah, they've really cracked this kind of sub 500 GT aluminium yacht market, haven't they? They're so good. Last up, we have the news that 124-meter superyacht Katara has left the Norbergskog shipyard following a comprehensive refit that involved a number of significant modifications. According to the shipyard, the contract for the refit was signed in October 2021. Cosmetic changes included a complete paint job and a broad range of interior upgrades. The bridge and navigation area also were overhauled. Elsewhere, the crew galley and floor underwent a large-scale modification with the aim of upgrading the space for crew ops. Now, Katara had been moored at Norbergskog's Rendsburg facility since 2020, and she paid a visit to the port of Dover before continuing to the Mediterranean. I was at Norbergskog a couple of weeks ago, saw Katara. Despite my pleading, I wasn't allowed on board. But she looked really good. It was a gloomy day, but the paint looked absolutely perfect.
It's great to see the yard kind of back up and really busy again. And of course, you interviewed the owner, Lars Windhurst, and that is in our October issue. Yeah. I'm getting my issues confused. Yeah, another feature. You've been.
It's exhausting. two months. I need a rest.
But it is a good read.
Oh, thank you very much.
So yeah, everyone can look up that in the October issue. But yeah, I hadn't appreciated how many other businesses he'd been involved with. It's very impressive.
Yeah, so another guy who made me feel desperately inadequate, because we're basically the same age. He owns a 74-meter superyacht, and he's done so much. And he was very famous very young, because he started a tech business when he was he left school to start a tech business, and then when the first dot-com bubble kind of inflated, he really rode that wave and was kind of hailed as the kind of this German wunderkind of the tech economy. And then it all kind of came crashing down with the dot-com crash. But he was being flown around the world by Helmut Kohl, meeting world leaders and all this kind of stuff. So he's a really, really fascinating guy.
He's owned the yacht for 10 years as well. I know. Not only does he own that size of yacht. He bought 36, it when he was actually my age.
36 years old, and he bought a 74-meter superyacht, yeah. But he, you know, he's very hard to begrudge, because he clearly has, his work ethic is insane.
We exist on 4 hours a night sleep.
I know, he's like Thatcher.
Always amazed at people. I mean, because I get up at 5:30
for your Peloton.
From a Peloton.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a fun life. but I do go to bed early. I'm always amazed by people that can just exist on that tiny amount of sleep. It's very impressive.
Yeah, ditto. If I did 4 hours of sleep a night, I'd be non-functioning. Lars can do it. So yeah, have a read if you want to learn more about Lars Windhorst. That feature is in the October issue of the magazine, which went to press last week. 336 pages.
Yeah, bit kudos to Simon and the rest of the
guys
on the production side.
So it's a great one. It's a really good one. So that'll be at the Monaco show, and it's out in a couple of weeks, isn't it? Various other places. So pick up yours. Don't miss it. Lastly, Boat Pro.
It's Data brought to you by Boat Pro.
Data brought to you by Boat Pro.
How many years are we doing this podcast?
I can't even remember.
It's the same every week, Stuart. Anyway, this week, we will be looking ahead to the Cannes Yachting Festival, which, of course, starts next week on September the 6th. So last year, there were approximately 560 boats on display, and it's expected there'll be more of the same this year. But of course, we only focus on ones that are 24 metres or larger, unless they're owned by famous Formula One stars. And the superyacht fleet this year, excluding the secondhand brokerage fleet, just looking at new yachts there, will be 70 yachts with a total LOA of 2,185 metres. The average LOA is going to be 31.2 metres with an average GT of just 200. Amazingly, there's only one sailing yacht amongst those, which will be the Y Yachts Y9. But there are lots of other projects just below that 24 metre range. And sadly, as I'm sure we spoke about in the podcast, RASF will not attend the show, having caught fire. So the new flagship will be the 44-metre Bering Huss. I hope that's how it's pronounced.
Huss.
Huss, yeah.
Hiss.
Hiss.
I have no idea. I'll find out at the show. Report back.
I said it with confidence first time. I should have just stuck with it. Anyway, there are 37 yachts in the 24 to 30 metre category, of which 12 are debuts. There are 28 in the 30 to 40 metre range, of which 9 are debuting. And then there's 5 yachts in the 40 to 50 metre range, all of which are making their debut. So it looks to be another impressive addition, with 37% of the yachts on display even making their European or their world debut. So there's going to be lots for you to be looking at, Stuart. You're going to be kept on your toes.
Yeah, I like Cannes. It's a good show. It's slightly less manic than Monaco. And everyone's so happy to see each other because you're not quite completely burnt out by your show season because it's the first one. So everyone's very excited. Everyone's smiley. It's great. It's a good fun show.
Some of the top premiers to look out for are the Bering 145, which we obviously just mentioned above, the Custom Line 140, the Baglietto Dom 133, the Maiori 125, the Kandos Oceanic 143, the Bonetti Beyond and the Oasis 34 metre, the AZ Grande 37 metre and 26 metre, the Sunseeker 100 and the Ferretti 860. What's top of your list, Stu? You've obviously been on the Bonetti. Both Bonettis?
I've I had a look at the Baglietto Dom 133 when I was at the shipyard not too long ago. That Custom Line 140, I think, is going to be really interesting. It's the flagship of the Custom Line fleet. So they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So it'd be good to see what they're doing with all that volume. Very much looking forward to seeing that. The great thing about the Cannes show is, although I heard a horrible rumor today that there'll be no sea trials because of the water restrictions in the south of France. So boats aren't going out because no one can wash them down afterwards.
Yeah.
Is that scurrilous rumour or is that fact?
I only heard this rumour in the same meeting that we were both just in. I mean, it might be true in that it's very French, so there is a drought in France, but it all depends on which area of France you're in. And then there's three different categories depending on which area you're in, and each category has slightly different rules and regs. So it may well be that Cannes is within that and is within an area where there is a complete hose pipe ban, effectively, I presume, is why they can't be using fresh water to wash off the boats. But then there's lots of kind of, you know, if it's business essential and things like that. I don't know.
Well, hopefully that's getting very technical. Hopefully it rains between now and Tuesday.
But France is dry.
Well, I mean, I hope in a way that is scurrilous rumour. Obviously, we don't want to go waste water. But a Cannes yachting festival without sea trials is a diminished show, because that's part of the fun of it, is being able to go out there and it's like the M25 in rush hour sometimes, trying to get out of the harbour. But it's a great opportunity to do some driving. We'll let you know.
Yeah, you can report back on that.
I will.
On the hosepipe situation in France.
But yeah, lots of good stuff to see. 37% of yachts on display making their European or world debuts. Brilliant. Can't wait to see them all. And that's all we have for you this week. Any parting words, Sophia?
No, I don't think so. I'm presuming you're on a plane next week, so I think it will be Charlotte and I returning next week.
Yeah, I think you and Charlotte are on deck next week. I'm not going to try and record a podcast from a boat show again.
No.
That was a disaster.
Last time from Cannes, you were being kicked out of your hotel room.
Oh, yes, I was. I remember. I had the cleaner knocking on my door trying to get me out and trying to record a podcast. Yeah, stressful. Anyway, thank you for tuning in this week. This has been a production of Boat International Media. The podcast was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen. If I see you in Cannes, say hi. I come by the stand, pick up a magazine. Take care and have a great week.